Well, I add my good morning this morning. Good morning to all of you. We're continuing our exploration this month of the theme of listening. Listening. Our theme is not talking. Our theme is listening this month. And part of what we're focusing on in I'm going to talk with you guys in a minute, but for now I need you to listen since I'm talking about listening. So this morning we're going to explore a little bit more and a little more deeply about what it means to truly and to deeply listen to one another. Not just to listen for what we expect to hear, not to listen only for our own angle on things or how we might influence the conversation, but listening for the sake of really, truly, deeply hearing one another. What might that look like in our own lives? What might that look like in our public life? There's a little thing called an election happening tomorrow, I've noticed. And sometimes politicians don't listen so well to each other or to us. So how would our life change if listening was at the heart of who we were and what we did? Ted Humphreys is going to come forward now, an ardent listener in our congregation and community here to light our chalice flame as we think and reflect together on what it means not only to listen, but to really hear. Well, I'd like to invite if there are any other kids or youth that would like to come forward at this time for our conversation about listening, I would be happy to have them come forward. I can tell I've got my work cut out for me this morning. So, I was going to talk with you about the game Telephone. So, I think there's a little enthusiasm about the game Telephone, and I was wondering if any of you remember the time that we played the game Telephone with the entire congregation. Do you remember that? We put different words, different phrases. It was actually several sentences that each section of the congregation had to share with the game Telephone from the back all the way to the front. And do you have any idea whether we actually successfully passed the phrase all the way around? No. The answer is no. We didn't successfully pass any of the phrases from the back to the front in any of the sections. And not only did we not successfully pass the phrase from the front to the back, people just made stuff up. By the time it got from the back to the front, it wasn't what had been written at all. People had added words. They made up whole new phrases. And I thought about that afterward, and I thought, you know, that's a good example of not only listening, but hearing. Have you ever had a conversation where you say something to someone, and they say, oh, I know exactly what you mean, and then they say something back to you, and you go, that's not what I said at all. Were you even listening to me? You've had some of those conversations where people don't really exactly listen. So maybe the next time you're in your class, or actually, you know what? Would really be fun. Play a game of telephone at the dinner table with your family and see if it can make its way around, make up a phrase, and see if it would make its way around your entire table. Yeah, and actually still be the same thing. Well, even if you only have three people, you know what? I still bet there would be times when it would not come out the right way. Even if you only have two people at the table sometimes. We've had some of those conversations. Have you had conversations? Just one, you and one other person where it doesn't quite go the way you thought it might go? Sometimes I have a feeling you and your brother don't always listen and hear quite clearly to each other. So I'm wondering about that. But before I get in even more trouble than I'm already in, I think we should say our prayer, because sometimes when we speak from the heart and we say what's most on our minds and our hearts, the things we're most worried about, that's the time that we speak most directly and people can actually hear us. Yeah. Where's your hood? Your hood's right here. Can I put it up? Okay. All right. So now, can we hold hands, please? Spirit, we give thanks for those times when we speak most directly and most clearly about what we love, who we love, and what we care about. Help us not only to speak clearly, but to do as much work at our listening as we do at our speaking. May we do this season and every season of our lives. With gratitude for this day, we say, blessed be and amen. Thanks for coming to talk with me. And I did hear you. I want you to know I heard you. Please join me now in that spacious place in your being that holds honesty and truth, love and hope, grief and loss. Please join me in that space of meditation and prayer. Spirit of life and love, holy presence known to us by many names. We pause this morning, having brought our beings to this altar of community. Just as the flame was passed from hand to hand, we are aware this morning that we are bringers of light, sharers of warmth, that we can extend ourselves, our beings, to those around us, or as often happens, we can close ourselves off. There is so much to worry about these days. And the more fearful and anxious we get, the less open we are to truly encountering other people, especially those different from us. And so our prayer this morning is that we might push through and push past our anxiousness, to find within us the capacity to reach out. For we know that peace will not be possible unless and until there is more genuine meeting in the world. And so for all of this, for all of those parts of the world about which we are worried this morning, and for all our worries about tomorrow's outcome, we bring our hearts to you, to us, to life. So may it be. And amen.
Generosity is a word of abundance. Even when I say and spell the word generosity, it has a ring of outwardness and giving and open-heartedness. I suppose I do think of generosity mainly as giving. And what have I learned about giving within this community? My $22 a month sure can't make much of a difference. So my perspective on the meaning of generosity has changed since I found a home in this church. Now, generosity for me means something to do with commitment, daring to say that I will, repeatedly, over an extended span of time, doing the thing I said I'd do, over and over, to help hold up the structures that contain our values. And generosity means being really honest with my truth, figuring out what I can and can't do, what I'm capable of, and openly voicing those restrictions. And then there's the act of blocking off time for this community to which I belong, making sure that I have time for you, for us, is a lot harder than letting some money slip from my bank account every month. noticing and blocking off the community supper the second Friday of each month, attending a monthly committee meeting, even just making sure that I get to church on Sunday morning when, yeah, I could be doing something else or just lounging at home on my only day off. But generosity now is a word for me that signals commitment. It means holding things in common within this community so that we can be together and loved to the best of our individual and collective capabilities. And so we can spread this love outward towards the larger world. Money can go a long way, but I believe that it's people who are generous with their hearts and their hands, and that is what makes the real difference. Thank you.
This morning I've got two brief readings for you for our message this morning, and the first is from Malcolm Gladwell. Malcolm Gladwell, journalist, sort of social scientist, writes for The New Yorker and has written many books. This is a brief excerpt from his book entitled Blink, The Power of Thinking Without Thinking. We are often careless with our powers of rapid cognition. We don't know where our first impressions come from or precisely what they mean, so we don't always appreciate their fragility. Taking our powers of rapid cognition seriously means we have to acknowledge the subtle influences that can alter or undermine or bias the products of our unconscious. Too often, we are resigned to what happens in the blink of an eye. It doesn't seem like we have much control over what bubbles to the surface from our unconscious, but we do. And if we can control the environment in which rapid cognition takes place, then we can control rapid cognition. We can prevent the people fighting wars or staffing emergency rooms or policing the streets from making mistakes. Second reading is most of a poem by William Stafford entitled A Ritual to Read to Each Other. If you don't know the kind of person I am, and I don't know the kind of person you are, a pattern that others made may prevail in the world, and following the wrong God home, we may miss our star. For there is many a small betrayal in the mind, a shrug that lets the fragile sequence break, sending with shouts the horrible errors of childhood storming out to play through the broken dike. And so I appeal to a voice, to something shadowy, a remote, important region in all who talk. Though we could fool each other, we should consider, lest the parade of our mutual life get lost in the dark. For it is important that awake people be awake, or a breaking line may discourage them back to sleep. The signals we give, yes or no or maybe, should be clear. The darkness around us is deep. The poet and the journalist point the way, don't they? We are too often asleep and rarely aware of the way our unconscious impressions rule. It is more critically important than that we imagine, that we speak with honest clarity and listen with an equal measure of powerful intention. So much depends upon this. As the poet said, following the wrong God home, we may miss our star. How can we ever hope for peace and understanding in the world if we can't find it and create it in our own lives? I had a psychology professor in undergraduate school who pointed out something to me that was so simple and so revolutionary that it still astounds me. He said, quite simply, we see and we hear what we expect to see and hear. We have created patterns of perception, Jerry Goddard said to me, scripts that are so ingrained in us that it is hard to move beyond them. So the expectations we have for certain types of people, you know what I mean, right? Those people and those situations are so powerful that we see them even where they don't actually exist. Jerry Goddard used to say in our class, seeing may be believing, but it ain't necessarily so. So you may believe what you see and what you hear, but it might not actually be the truth of what is actually happening in that moment, what is actually real in that moment. So we have to consciously and deliberately and intentionally push past and push against those patterns of perceptions, those scripts that we have written. We have to work to remain open to what is real, to what is actual. Much of what we see and hear is otherwise going to turn out to be some version of what we have imagined or assumed or projected. How nutty is that? We don't see what is most of the time. We don't hear what is actually being said most of the time. We'll need every bit of what was spoken about last week as the basic essence and basic building blocks of listening. We will need our ears, our eyes, our mind, our heart, and our undivided attention in order to actually perceive what is happening. Which brings me to a story about a mistake I made last spring. Now, I like to think that I'm a very good listener. I have been trained in offering care to other people, and a big part of that equation is, of course, listening to what is actually going on for that person. Yet my thinking that I'm pretty good at listening can also lead to a certain amount of hubris and occasional overconfidence, even borderline arrogance. All of which is pretty tough for me to admit as a person who prides herself on and even extols the virtues of humility. I listened to someone last spring who was hurt and deeply offended by one of the services that we had last spring, last March to be precise. And as I listened to this person tell me what they were feeling, what I heard or what I thought was going on was, at first, I didn't agree with a point that was made in that service. But actually, what was really being said was not, I disagreed, not, I don't think so. What was actually being said was, I was hurt and offended. I felt a bit like my personhood was up for grabs and attacked. So I listened, but I didn't hear. I can see and admit now that I entered that conversation with some unconscious background noise. Malcolm Gladwell would say, I wasn't really perceiving what was actually happening. Part of that background noise in me was about my own place, my own social location, who I am in the world. I was thinking, part of my background noise was, what could you possibly have to tell me that I don't already know about systemic oppression? I am a woman, so I know sexism. I am a lesbian, so I've experienced heterosexism. And I'm a person of color, so I've experienced racism. That's like the trifecta of oppression, right? So what else is there for me to know or to learn about oppression that I haven't already experienced firsthand myself? What could I possibly not be aware of? Well, friends, I may know in my bones by virtue of my own life experience plenty, certainly enough to write a book or two about oppression. But what I had forgotten last spring, what I needed to learn again, what I forgot, or what I didn't listen for or listen past, is the fact that there are oppressions, there are experiences in life that I don't know. And my first response should have been more like the choir's song this morning. My first response should have been, I will stand with you. My first response should have been to seek solidarity and understanding, to seek growth, to seek deeper knowledge of other ways of experiencing the world beyond my own bubble of life. My own response should have been to look at how otherness and marginalization works in other people's lives, not just my own, and to look beyond exceptionalizing my own experience. Aren't I so special? I've got three kinds of oppression I've dealt with. I have never known religious persecution. I don't wear a niqab. I have never been set aside and put apart because of that. I have never been on the receiving end of transphobia, and there are people in our congregation who could teach me and should teach me about that. I have never felt the sting of ableism. I have never lived in fear of whether or not I would be able to make ends meet. There are so many life experiences that I have not had to have. You got that right, that I have not had to have. It's not like a choice. That's what the thing drives me crazy. Oh, well, you're just choosing. No, people have to go through certain experiences in life. It's not optional. And so we should try to understand, what is it like for you to live, to go through the world with your set of lenses and experiences? I can only, it seems to me, see beyond the bubble of my life if and when I am willing to have others expand my world. And this is why listening is such a gift. This is why listening is not just a nice little thing we do sometimes. This is why listening is a spiritual practice and a discipline. It's a spiritual practice and it's a discipline because it is profoundly powerful to really be heard. And it's profoundly powerful because when you really hear, hearing can be transformative. When we listen, and we hear and we take that hearing into our being, not listening and then holding it at arm's length, but listening and taking it into our being, then we can be changed. We can be changed even if we don't completely understand, even if we'll never completely know that other experience ourselves, we can be changed. We can find that our whole sense of things can shift. For example, I may never fully understand, I will never fully understand what it means to be an abuse survivor, but I can have a deeper sense of the impact that that has on someone's life if I listen and hear someone tell me deeply about that experience. Now, I was going to tell you another story that makes me look bad, because I think it's important. This is the humility part. So over the summer, I was at Island View Beach with my son, and he, you know, the two of us, that's interesting in and of itself, but that's another sermon. But I was at Island View Beach with Demetrius, and there was a lovely family there playing with a kite, and Demetrius is obsessed with kites. So we couldn't actually walk along the beach, which was my plan. We just needed to stand by this family with this kite and watch the kite. And it was a grandfather holding the kite in the air, and his grandson was about 5 or 6. He wasn't nearly as interested in the kite as Demetrius was, but the grandfather was staying with it. And I could tell and sense that this grandfather was probably from a Spanish-speaking culture. At least so I thought. So at some point, I thanked him in Spanish for helping us out here, for being willing to keep going, even though he had also spoken, you know, flawless English. And I realized as I left that day that my saying thank you in Spanish could have signaled what I hope it signaled, what I thought, what my well-intentioned self thought it would signal to him, which is, I see you. I see and appreciate who you are in the world, and I'm acknowledging that. But he also could have felt and experienced my speaking Spanish to him as my saying, you are different. And what I notice in you is your difference. Not how you're similar to me, not how we're both here with little kids on the beach enjoying ourselves. Not, he could have felt it like a... I notice you're different, and your difference made all the difference to me. It could have been positive acknowledgement, or it could have felt like negative singling out of his otherness. It's a good example of why I have to not only listen, but I have to listen again, because I will continue to make mistakes like I did last spring, and I will continue to make mistakes like I did on that beach this summer. But I can't let it stop me from wanting to grow and learn and change and be better for it. Friends, we have to listen again and again and again, because we have to get ourselves out of the way. We have to come back around again and again to what we figure out is that sort of inescapable, vitally important truism in the world, which is that people have wisdom about their own lives. I can't write your script for you. That's not mine to do. I can't tell you that I know better than you do about your own life. I can't tell you what hurts you and what doesn't. The audacity. I can't tell you what you need and don't need. I can't tell you what's offensive and what isn't to you. What presumption. So if you tell me you're hurt, I need to say, tell me about that hurt. Why did it hurt? Or that was offensive to you, tell me, why was that offensive? just as we would want someone else to honor and hear our truths and our insight, the collected wisdom that we have gained through all of our living about what is and isn't true for us, about being human, about being alive. Surely we would want to do that for someone else. If you don't know the kind of person I am, and I don't know the kind of person you are, a pattern that others made may prevail in the world, and following the wrong God home, we may miss our star. Pattern that others have made is racist and classist and xenophobic and anti-Semitic. It is all kinds. We are following the wrong God home. It is powerful and it is hard to shake, but we are missing so many stars in the firmament of life and beauty that we need to wake up. It is important that awake people be awake. So let us listen and listen again for another way. Let us listen for all we don't know. Let us confess, as I have before you this morning, our arrogance and our assumptions about other people, so that we can then be open again to what they have to share with us. And let us, please, let us be changed. Let us be transformed by our listening. So may it be. And amen. My sister in my heart, my brother in the song, though troubles wait at every turn, you gotta do the turn, I know I can go on. Friends, we can, not only can, we must go on. We must go on listening for the deepest words, for the most heartfelt truths of what it means for our brothers and our sisters to be alive on planet Earth in the 21st century. Where are their hurts? Where are their truths? Let us stop following the wrong God home. Let us look for the stars.